From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Maine Senator Susan Collins has thrown up a potential roadblock to Trump's Supreme Court pick for Justice Anthony Kennedy's seat. Senator Collins, considered a moderate Republican, has vowed not to vote for any candidate for the seat that would jeopardize Roe versus Wade. In an interview on CNN's State of the Union on Sunday, she said, "I would not support a nominee who demonstrated hostility to Roe v. Wade because that would mean to me that their judicial philosophy did not include a respect for established decisions, established law." But the pro-choice senator also said she thinks current justices Neil Gorsuch, who she voted to confirm last year, and Justice John Roberts could be trusted to preserve women's right to an abortion. My guest is Jessica Mason-Piclo, Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, former Assistant Director of the Health Law Clinic at Hamline Law School in St. Paul, Minnesota, and former litigator. And she just wrote a piece on Rewire.news entitled, "Why I Believe President Donald Trump Will Choose a Woman to Kill Roe v. Wade." Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So before we get to the heart of your story, what do you make of Susan Collins's statements made on Sunday? Many suggest she's being terribly naive if she doesn't think Gorsuch and Roberts would, in a heartbeat, kill the Roe v. Wade decision if they had the chance.
I think naive is probably a generous word for how the senator is behaving right now. She has absolutely no basis in fact to say that either Justice Gorsuch or Justice Roberts would vote to uphold precedent when after this term we saw case after case after case where they did the exact opposite, including the very last day of the Supreme Court in the Janus decision when they gave a big punch to the stomach to public sector union employees and overturned 40 years of precedent to do so. So for Senator Collins to say that she believes that Roe v. Wade is safe because of the votes of Justice Neil Gorsuch and Chief Justice John Roberts, both of whom have not cast a pro-choice vote in their tenure as justices, would, I think that we should ask her some more questions about that.
So in the short list that Trump has essentially announced nominees, there are a couple of women. In your piece, you write that you believe Trump will nominate a woman. On the one hand, of course, that could go some ways towards improving gender parity on the court. On the other hand, of course, an anti-abortion, an anti-choice woman would be a clever way to undo women's rights. Why do you conclude what you do?
Well, I think, first of all, there's the initial hurdle that for my hypothesis to be proven correct, the president has to sort of get over his own misogyny that we've seen play out in much of his administration. But conservatives have been gunning for Roe v. Wade as judicial precedent since the court decided it over 40 years ago. And so to think that they don't understand what this moment means is to be naive. You know, Justice Kennedy was the vote in Planned Parenthood v. Casey that reaffirmed Roe, and that was really the last solidly pro-choice vote that he cast. And he cast that vote instead of Robert Bork, who conservatives had tried to place on the bench before him and Democrats had successfully blocked. So we have Kennedy's own appointment to show that undoing Roe v. Wade has been serious for them. And so they see this as an opportunity. And they have a couple candidates that they have really picked and are sort of perfect for that and fit into this guise that gender parity is the same thing as gender equality. And that's just not the case.
And it's interesting that, of course, we do have women who call themselves feminist and who are against the right of women to have an abortion. We saw this debate, I guess you could put it, that occurred within the Women's March in January 2017 when women who wanted to join the Women's March were basically told they weren't welcome because they were anti-abortion. So who are some of the women that you think could be nominated to fill this vacancy and who we should really be quite scared of?
Well, last week, when Justice Kennedy announced his retirement, I said that the nominee to really watch most closely on this is Amy Coney Barrett. And CBS is reporting this week that she is, along with Brett Kavanaugh, one of two of Trump's top contenders. So let's talk about Barrett for a moment.
Yeah.
She is a former professor at the University of North Dakota, and she's a current justice on current judge of the United States Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. So that's the circuit that hears cases out of Wisconsin and Illinois and Indiana, for example. And she is a very conservative Catholic who comes from the Mike Pence tradition of thinking about where the law and religion intersect in our individual lives.
I understand that although she is a law professor, before she was confirmed to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, you write she had never been a judge before. If she's on the short list for the Supreme Court, she will not have been a judge for very long at all.
No, not for very long. And she doesn't have a very deep litigation experience either. You know, we do have an example of a member on the bench right now, Justice Elena Kagan, who also wasn't a judge before, but unlike Amy Coney Barrett, had extensive experience litigating cases and worked in the Solicitor General's office well before becoming nominated. So she knew her way around a courtroom and she knew her way around the law in a much different capacity. Amy Coney Barrett has spent some time litigating and then spent a lot of time in the religious advocacy world as a professor at the University of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And this is important because the University of Notre Dame was, during the Obama administration, one of the institutions that conservatives really rallied behind in attacks on the Affordable Care Act, for example. We saw this in the birth control benefit. And these are anti-civil rights agendas that are playing out in terms of the way that conservatives frame them, religious disputes, and the implications are really very devastating should she be nominated and confirmed.
She's also, I understand, a member of the Federalist Society. Remind us why that is a critical factor.
So the Federalist Society is a extremely conservative legal organization that has morphed into quite a force when it comes to judicial nominations on the right. And in fact, it is impossible more or less to be a judicial nominee without fidelity to the Federalist Society. And the Federalist Society hold some of the most extreme and conservative positions within the legal community. And so they are absolutely not reflective of the legal mainstream. They have become reflective of the conservative mainstream. And I think that's an important distinction that needs more attention in terms of the direction that the right has taken the law.
Hmm. Who else is Trump considering that you think we need to pay attention to, who would be a woman helping to undo Roe versus Wade?
Another woman who I think to pay attention to is Joan Larson out of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And she's important because she was formerly of the Michigan Supreme Court. And your listeners may recall that Michigan was a state that was playing out some of the worst and most devastating economic policies before the Trump administration even took office. And under her watch at the Michigan Supreme Court, she blessed those policies, things like the reason why Flint still doesn't have clean water. And so not only is she really has a terrible record when it comes to civil rights and reproductive rights, but just broadly speaking, she also has a really disturbing record when it comes to granting broad swatches of executive power. Mm-hmm. She spent some time in the Office of Legal Counsel and has a belief that the executive has quite a bit of power and that the courts cannot really check that. And so given the current situation that this administration finds itself in, I think nominating a judge who is a big proponent of wide swathes of executive power is something we should pay attention to.
Both of the women we've discussed so far, Amy Coney Barrett and Joan Larson, are vehemently anti-choice. But you also point out in your piece on Rewire.news that they both clerk for Antonin Scalia, which, of course, should scare progressives and liberals very, very much. Antonin Scalia was not a swing vote like Kennedy was.
No, not at all. And he was not only was he not a swing vote, he, you know, espoused many positions on the right that Justice Kennedy would not sign on to. So a replacement, a Kennedy replacement with a Scalia clerk or, you know, a Scalia acolyte is a real dramatic shift of the court to the right. It effectively puts Chief Justice John Roberts as the swing vote on the court to the extent that there is even a swing vote.
What about Diane Sykes? She was on the big list of 25 people, and she's among the women that you profile in your piece. Who is she? Also, I understand she's also a very vehemently anti-choice candidate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is important to really drive home is that you don't get to be on this list unless you're vehemently anti-choice. New York Times had some reporting today that said, you know, the Federalist Society is trying to back away from this a little bit and say, well, we never actually discussed abortion or Roe v. Wade in the vetting of our candidates, so we don't see it really as an issue. And that's a disingenuous thing for them to be saying and for the Times to be reporting without comment or context, because you don't get to be in this position unless you've shown that undoing abortion rights and civil rights protections generally is something that you are willing to do. And Diane Sykes is no stranger to that either. Although she has potentially a dark mark against her, she's on the Seventh Circuit right now, and she did write an opinion that prevented Indiana from defunding Planned Parenthood. And so my suspicion is, even though that is not the opinion itself, the law was not a radical overreach, I have a feeling even that vote alone was probably enough to knock her a few places down on the list.
So the Trump administration, Donald Trump, has announced he's going to be making his decision by July 9th, on July 9th, and in the meantime is going to be interviewing at least five top contenders. At the top of the list, I know we've been discussing women, but in that list certainly is Amy Coney Barrett, but at the top of the list is a man named Brett Kavanaugh. I'm guessing no surprise that he is also antitrust, and indeed probably all five on this list are anti-choice, right?
Right. And Brett Kavanaugh is a perennial conservative Supreme Court shortlister. And he is very similar to Neil Gorsuch in the sense that he is young and ideologically driven, but has a veneer of respectability that somehow makes his radical politics seem more palpable to some folks. And I haven't quite figured that out. He is currently on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a very important circuit in Washington, D.C. And he is absolutely hostile to civil rights and reproductive rights. Recently, he wrote a really upsetting dissent in the Garza v. Hargan case. That's the case of the undocumented minor in ORR custody who the Trump administration had been trying to block from getting an abortion. And the conservatives in this litigation are arguing effectively that undocumented minors in government custody have no constitutional right to an abortion. That's not what the law says. And the law says very clearly that they do, and they have constitutional rights regardless of their documented status. And so he is helping realize some of the administration's worst constitutional arguments when it comes to vulnerable people. A replacement on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals would be a win for the Trump administration, too. One of the circuit courts of appeals that the Obama administration had success in really getting some good key appointments was the D.C. Circuit. And of course, so it would be there. And I would say, you know, sort of finally, it would add insult to injury to Merrick Garland, who still sits on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals as a result of Republican obstruction of his nomination.
Well, Jessica, the two female Republican senators, often considered moderates, I mentioned Susan Collins of Maine, and then, of course, there's Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. The two of them have fairly reliably, had a legislative record protecting women's right to an abortion, although, of course, they seem to be very naive on Neil Gorsuch. Do you think that if Trump nominates a woman who is going to have an anti-choice agenda, that these two female senators will actually vote against that woman?
I don't. I mean, I really believe that, well, I would hope that they would, but I'm feeling a little cynical at the moment. I would hope that they would vote against her because it would be consistent with their stated policy values. And as I mentioned in my piece, Republicans want to call nominating a woman who is fundamentally opposed to measures that advance equality and the dignity and autonomy of women, and they want to call it feminism. And they would use this as a wedge against Murkowski and against Collins to say, well, what, would you actually vote against this nominee, this historic nominee, only the fifth successful nominee, woman nominated to the court? I say successful because we had that brief moment in time when President Bush nominated Harriet Myers and then withdrew her nomination. But, you know, so, I mean, that pressure campaign is real, and we know that they've been meeting with them, and Senator Heitkamp in North Dakota, a Democratic senator as well. And so the game is afoot in that sense.
Jessica, I'm sure you've seen the New York Times and Vanity Fair pieces that lay out the long game that Trump has been playing on the Kennedy retirement, that he basically has spent the last 17 months alternately bribing and cajoling Kennedy to retire, promising he would keep his legacy alive, appointing and promoting Kennedy's clerks and his mentees, and basically waging this secret war to get a second Supreme Court pick. So the timing of Kennedy's retirement was a surprise to everybody but him and his White House, possibly senior members of the Republican Party. Some have suggested that, and I don't know if you have an opinion on this, a little bit outside of the scope of your piece on Rewire, but some have suggested that Trump should not get the chance to nominate somebody while he is in a position to, in the near future, have a case involving himself reach the Supreme Court. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that, you know, it is highly unusual, to say the least, to have a president who is under active criminal investigation have a blank check to just nominate and appoint folks to the Supreme Court. So that, at the very least, should be a reason why Democrats and, frankly, Republicans should take this as a process not to move quickly on. I mean, we sat forever on the Merrick Garland nomination, and the reality is that advice and consent is a serious constitutional duty that members of the Senate have, and they need to take it as seriously as the Constitution dictates. In terms of, you know, wooing Kennedy off the bench, I'm not surprised by this. On the one hand, Justice Kennedy is, we talk about him as a moderate and as a conservative. He's really just a conservative. And so that makes him a Republican, and he wants to have his nomination secured by a Republican president. And so this would be an opportunity to do so. I think some of it is just, you know, as much about Kennedy being a partisan and that being something that is less frequently talked about. So there's that. I would just hope that the Senate would take its duty to really hold serious hearings and push these nominees on very serious views, because it is not just Roe v. Wade that's at stake. Conservatives have said, for example, that they are unhappy with the Obergefell v. Hodges decision, the decision that granted marriage equality rights across this country. And so we saw at the close of this term a lot of unfinished business that Kennedy's replacement will be tasked with finishing.
It is a very, very dire situation indeed, Jessica. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in rewire.news from our website. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I wish I had better news.
Jessica Mason-Piclo is Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, former Assistant Director of the Health Law Clinic at Hamline Law School in St. Paul, Minnesota, and former litigator. We've been discussing her newest piece on Rewire.news. It's called Why I Believe President Donald Trump Will Choose a Woman to Kill Roe v. Wade. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.